Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Hi, I'm Clara Jeffrey, co-editor of Mother Jones, and tonight we're here to present InForum's 21st Century Visionary Award to Cecile Richards. Cecile Richards has served as the president of Planned Parenthood since 2006. She was previously the deputy chief of staff for San Francisco's own Representative Nancy Pelosi, and she was named one of 2012's 100 most influential people in the entire world by Time magazine. We're so pleased to have her here tonight, and so now, without further ado, thank you. Well, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to the conversation with Clara later for this evening's conversation. I know as she's taken over as co-editor of Mother Jones and has built an incredible Washington Bureau and Mother Jones into a 24-hour news operation that regularly breaks stories. And these last few weeks, Mother Jones has really broken some stories. So, and it's a total honor to be here in the Castro Theater. I'm very honored by this award, and I want to say that I'm really here to accept this on behalf of the thousands of extraordinary Planned Parenthood doctors and nurses and clinicians who all across this country, despite all the slings and arrows and the politicians who want to put us out of business, come to work and provide health care to 3 million people every single year. So thank you on behalf of them. And I know that this crowd tonight is the next generation crowd, I think. And so that's particularly appropriate because I feel like there's so many folks who were in the early fights for women's rights who are kind of ready for the cavalry to arrive, from the 21st century. Because it is incredible that actually today we are still fighting for rights that we thought actually were, established a long time ago. The right to safe and legal abortion. Established nearly 40 years ago in the United States, the right to birth control, even further back than that, and, of course, the very understanding that rape is a crime, not to be redefined. All of this has been actually up for debate in the current Congress. And yet so much of what women have accomplished in this century and in this country can be measured by our ability to plan our families. This right fundamentally change the ability and the roles and opportunities of women in the United States of America and around the world. Although it seems like there's some folks who've been angry ever since. And the more progress that women make, the harder they fight back, which might not matter except that so many of them are in the United States Congress. And that's what's caused the trouble. But think back in 1916. Women, when birth control was illegal, it was very common for women to have 8, 10, 12 children, and the most common cause of death was childbirth. That year, Margaret Sanger and her sister Ethel opened the first storefront in Brooklyn, and for 10 cents apiece, women could get information about birth control. And women were lined up down the block, women with baby buggies, women with children in their arms. And 10 days later, an undercover cop busted Margaret, and she was arrested, thrown into jail, where she taught her fellow inmates about birth control as a true revolutionary. Exactly. A movement was born. Now, of course, it wasn't until 1965 that married couples got the constitutional right to use birth control. And then, of course, the pill became available, and women's lives changed dramatically. It's so interesting if you look back. In the 1960s, only about a third of undergraduates in college were women. Today, we're nearly 60% of the undergraduate population. Yep, not bad. In those years, only 4% of the law students were women. And now we represent roughly half of law students all across the country. And in fact, a recent University of Michigan study reported that fully one-third of the wage gains that women have made since the 1960s were made as a result of the birth control pill. So this is no small deal. And along the way, other important things happened. the Roe decision in 1974, which we believe established the right to legal abortion in this country, and we're going to fight for it as long as we have to. And then FDA approval of the morning after pill, things like this. And now, of course, finally, we actually have coverage under insurance plans for birth control, which, let's face it, this probably never would have happened if Viagra hadn't been invented by some genius. I mean, really, because once Viagra hit the market and became the fodder for every single late-night television advertisement that we see, it seemed a little bit unseemly to provide insurance for erectile dysfunction but not family planning. But, boy, has it been a fight. And, in fact, just this year, as you probably noticed, the House of Representatives, instead of passing a jobs bill or helping on affordable housing or any other of a million pressing issues, decided that they must hold a hearing on why women don't need insurance coverage for birth control, right? That's how important it was. And they not only blocked Georgetown law student Sandra Fluck from testifying, you may remember that, but they actually called five men to testify in her place. Now, fortunately, this is why I love social media, an enterprising Planned Parenthood staffer snapped a photo of this panel of men explaining why women didn't need birth control, posted it on Facebook, and the rest is history. In fact, that was a great moment. But in my 6 years at Planned Parenthood, I have to say the most exciting moment at my time in this job was last February when the President of the United States called me at my office to say that from here on out, under the Affordable Care Act, all women in this country, regardless of where they work, regardless of their employer, are going to have birth control covered by their insurance plans at no copay. This is revolutionary. This is incredible progress. So that's a big deal. Now, you may have heard, and there's a study that came out last week, and out of St. Louis. This was a study actually Planned Parenthood was involved in, part of a medical research study, where women were given access to any kind of birth control for no cost. And in short, this study really it simulated what is going to happen now under the Affordable Care Act. And so the stunning result: unintended pregnancy went down, teen pregnancy went down, and abortion rates went down, right? Shocking, shocking. And in fact, the researchers who did this study said that if it was replicated nationally, abortions would decrease possibly by up to 71% in America. So just imagine the progress we could make if we could get the politicians out of these issues and we could focus on what's best for women's health in America. It would absolutely be remarkable. There's so many opportunities. And at Planned Parenthood, we're always looking for new ways to get access to care for folks who need it. At Planned Parenthood, we see 3 million patients every single year through our health centers, more than 750 health centers in 49 states in America. That's a lot. But just last month, we had more than 4.4 million folks visit our website to get information. Now, that's about 50 million people a year. So that's 24/7 access to information about birth control or about STD testing. You can get it all on your smartphone. In fact, now you can type in your zip code and find a Planned Parenthood health center anywhere in America. We're like the Fandango of reproductive health care in this country. But I just love the thought that the same information that Margaret Sanger was thrown in jail about 96 years ago can now be accessed 24/7 anywhere in the world. That actually is progress. And the last few months, we've been piloting also something to me is very exciting. It's a program that allows people to text or chat with someone at Planned Parenthood, particularly helping young people who need to reach us sometimes at a moment of real concern or even crisis. Like there was a young girl who texted us the other night. She said, she just texted, "I'm a teenager, and I'm helpless. I'm really scared." So we were able to text back immediately to say, "Well, okay, it's great that you actually reached out to Planned Parenthood. We're here to help." And we went back and forth on the text, and she was in a very tough situation, and she needed to see a doctor. And so we made arrangements for her to have an appointment the next day. And so as we wrapped up this chat with her, we asked if she had what she needed. And she texted back, I think you've answered all my questions for now. Thanks, with a little smiley face emoticon. But just a few minutes later, she texted back, could I come back here if I have questions later on tonight? She wanted to know if Planned Parenthood would still be there for her. And my promise to you and to her is, by God, we will be, no matter what. That's our mission. That's our goal. But to do all this, it's not enough just to provide health care to folks. We've got to empower a whole new generation of activists, young women and young men who are going to lead this movement into the 21st century. Fortunately, this past year, when Planned Parenthood was under attack by Congress, the next generation had our back. We doubled the number of campus chapters for Planned Parenthood around the country. We've tripled our friends on Facebook. And we added 1.5 million brand new supporters to Planned Parenthood, and more than half of them are young people, and they're all registered to vote. And that, to me, is very exciting. So I've been an organizer all my life, but I feel like what I've seen this last year and a half is a whole new generation of leaders, like a young woman named Brandy, who's from here in California. Now, a few months back, Brandy called her mom because she was worried, because her breast looked funny, and Brandy's mom lived across the country, but she didn't skip a beat. She said, go to Planned Parenthood right now. Well, thank God she did. It turned out that Brandy had breast cancer, and we were able to refer her to a breast cancer specialist, and through some grants funding that we had, we were able to cover a lot of the cost of her care. And today, she's recovering at amazing speed. And in fact, now, post-surgery, Brandy is volunteering with Planned Parenthood as a national advocate to make sure that other young people get access to breast cancer screening. And I'm so grateful that Brandy is here with us tonight. So, Brandy, thank you for being here. On behalf of her, and on behalf of the next generation who may not have been there when their moms and maybe their grandmothers were fighting for women's equality, but who know that access to health care and access to rights is the key to their future, to the young women and the young men who are standing with Planned Parenthood into their generation, thank you, and thanks for this award. Should I take it with me? I guess I'll leave it here.
Take it with you. Cecile, I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about your parents. Everyone knows that your mother was the governor of Texas, Ann Richards, and your father was a major labor organizer and attorney. So I'm wondering what leadership skills you learned from each.
I was born in Waco, Texas, which I feel is bragging rights a bit. And it was funny because both my folks were from Waco, and they were high school sweethearts, and they went to Baylor University, which is a Baptist school, for those of you who haven't been to Waco, where my mother said every single thing they did was more fun because it was either against the rules or it was a sin. I don't know if that's how my parents got to be so feisty, but they were. And, you know, I grew up in Texas at a time when every movement that came through town, my folks were into. You know, the farm workers movement, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the women's movement. And, you know, the dinner table was never where we ate. That was where you sorted whatever precinct lists you were working on for a campaign. And so I feel like for both of my parents, they just, they never waited for someone to, you know, invite them in to a discussion or to a movement. They just got about doing it. And I'm so proud of both of them. My father is still alive and still fighting the good fight in Texas. And both of them were passionate about public service and about just doing what's right. And I think it really did lead me to my somewhat, you know, probably sketchy career. Just starting out as a labor organizer out of college. And I'm just so grateful to have grown up in a family where social justice was pretty much the name of the game.
For some people, being schlepped around to canvassing trips and phone banks and all that kind of thing would actually turn them off to politics. But what made it energizing and exciting to you as a kid?
Well, I think the thing is, and this is why I think movement organizing is just exciting. It's in fact, It's funny, when I was quite young, we lived in Dallas, and there was, the farm workers were organizing for minimum wage in Texas, which, I mean, basically farm workers had no rights. And my dad was a labor lawyer, and so they were going to start a big march from South Texas up to Austin, the capital, over this issue. And so my parents threw me and my brother in the back of the station wagon, which is the way you traveled those days, and we drove down to South Texas. And there was they were having a big dance at the VFW hall to kind of kick the thing off. And it was, you know, there it was, for those of you who haven't had the pleasure of being in South Texas, it was a dusty floor with, you know, colored lights all over and a conjunto band playing and folks shuffling around doing the two-step. And I turned to my dad and said, you know, this is my first dance.
No.
And so for me, I feel like it was never about drudgery and, you know, it was about being part of something that was really part of a community. And so, and that's the way I guess I think about the work we do, is it is about building community. And that's, there's nothing tedious or unpleasant about that at all.
So there have been so many surreal moments in your wheelhouse in the last couple of years. The James O'Keefe videos, the GOP threatening to shut down the entire federal government over your funding.
Right.
The Komen controversy, redefining rape, legitimate rape, transvaginal ultrasound, slut-shaming Sandra Fluke. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah.
If you could pick one moment and put it in a time capsule so the, you know, Ken Burns of 200 years from now could tell the story of this era and this moment, which one would you pick and why?
Oh, wow. That's really tough, because you're right. It's been a long year. And I think one of the interesting things has been when people really got to focus on who we are at Planned Parenthood and what we do. And again, I think I have to give credit to some of our opponents, because they always managed, whenever the fire was going out, to just throw a few more logs on or drop some kerosene. And I'll remember, I do remember one night I was, this may not be a perfect Ken Burns moment, but it really has always, I'll never forget it. I was about to go on some television program, and Glenn Beck went on the air to say that only hookers, it was no big deal. Sorry, kind of killed that line. It was no big deal that Planned Parenthood was getting defunded, because only hookers went to Planned Parenthood. And so the interesting thing was, through social media, immediately our Facebook page lit up with a few non-hookers that had been to Planned Parenthood for care.
I would imagine.
And I'll never forget, this woman wrote in from North Carolina, and she wrote, I guess he doesn't realize that a lot of us military wives go to Planned Parenthood when the doctor on base can't see us.
Right.
And I felt like if my mom had been there, she would say, you know, I hear America singing. Because to me, that is the amazing thing about Planned Parenthood, is, you know, one in five women have been to Planned Parenthood in this country. And that means a lot of folks from a lot of walks of life. And that's why we're such an important institution in this country, and why I don't care who's in office, we're never going away. You know, we're never going away.
So even Republican strategists howled in disbelief when the attack on contraception began.
Right.
I think it was Alex Costanellis who told Maureen Dowd that, you know, being against sex is not good. Sex
right.
is popular. And I'm wondering, what was the response from ordinary people? It seemed, even more than the attack on abortion rights, that people were just in sort of stunned disbelief that we were having this argument, you know, more than 30, 40, 50 years almost since contraception yeah. became legal.
Yeah, I'm still stunned that we're having this conversation. And you're right. It's so interesting, because the whole fight over getting birth control coverage by insurance plans, I can't tell you, this is a huge knockdown, drag out fight. 99% of women in this country have used birth control at some point in their lifetime. So you sort of want to say, I think, you know what, that ship sailed. There's really not a lot we can do now to sort of put that genie back in the bottle. And I think it's been, I think it's a huge error, but I think it does show fundamentally that the folks who are against women's rights who are against women having access to safe and legal abortion. They're also against birth control. They're against women having sex for any reason other than to have children. And I think this is really what this is about.
I mean, it's interesting. After that St. Louis study came out that you mentioned, the head of the American College of OBGYNs said that, you know, he believed that anyone who is a pro-life advocate would be completely in favor for universal contraception
That's
access
right.
because the results of that study and others before it were so clear.
That's right.
The quickest, easiest, cheapest way to reduce abortion. So why do you think that message doesn't, why can't the pro-life and pro-choice communities unite on that front?
I have no idea. And we've been trying for decades. No, I mean, it's really incredible. I was actually, I think about this all the time because, of course, we have a lot of folks who like to protest Planned Parenthood. And, in fact, I was going to a luncheon the other day in New York, and, it was out in Long Island, and it was a little bit way out in the country, and so you had to turn off this highway, and there were these protesters, there were these big ugly signs. Actually, it was interesting because I got into the luncheon, and this older woman said to me, "God, I'm so glad those protesters were there. I didn't know where to turn to get to the to get to the luncheon." Just take whatever you can get, the help that we can get. But the thing that when I see those folks, I really do want to roll down my window and say, you know what? If you actually wanted to, reduce the need for abortion in this country, you would be volunteering at a Planned Parenthood health center, because we do more every single day to provide birth control and reduce the need for abortion than any organization does in the United States, and have for 96 years. So, but. I do think, look, when you talk to the American people, and obviously we do a lot of research, we talk to voters all the time, we talk to our patients, what the American people believe is this is not the issue that they want the government focusing on. They want the government focusing on, in this arena, getting women access to affordable health care, including birth control. They want to make sure that young people have access to sex education, that helps them not become parents before they're ready, and get the government out of personal private decisions that women and families make about having children. That's basically it.
Were you, given how much reproductive rights helps motivate women voters in particular, were you shocked that Obama did not mention anything to do with reproductive rights in the first debate? I was a little shocked he didn't mention the 47% video, I have to say.
Right. Right. I think there's a lot of topics that didn't get discussed in that debate. And I do think women, the gulf between Mitt Romney and President Obama on women's issue is like the Grand Canyon. And so I really think it's important that women know. And we're through the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, doing a lot to make sure that women do know. Because, again, I think to your question earlier, and I know this is not a political gathering, but I can't help but point out that Mitt Romney, it's not just that he said he wants to overturn Roe versus Wade, mm-hmm. which, of course, the next president will have a real opportunity to possibly do with a Supreme Court appointment, but he said he's going to get rid of Planned Parenthood, and he said he's going to end the National Family Planning Program that, by the way, was actually signed into law by Richard Nixon. This has been a bipartisan program for...
And wasn't Barry Goldwater a huge promoter of Planned Parenthood?
Absolutely.
Back in the day?
In fact, Peggy Goldwater, his wife was one of the co-founders of Planned Parenthood in Arizona. No, there was back in the day, and we have a lot of Republican supporters. We have a lot of Republican patients, you know.
I mean, it's interesting because someone did an analysis of congressional voting records, and until the late 80s, I believe, abortion access was more Republicans voted for it than Democrats. What's happened to make it such a partisan issue and to slide so much to one party as it has?
Well, I mean, I think that, and I think we saw this in the beginning, the Ralph Reed days, but I think we've seen it now even more extreme with the Tea Party control of the Republican Party, is I feel like moderates have lost their opportunity to really play a significant role in the Republican Party, and that's a shame. Because I just don't think I do not think the Republican Party as a party today represents true Republican beliefs. And the difficulty is when you start pandering, frankly, to a very extreme minority, this is what you get. And so that's why we saw both in this Congress and we saw in state legislatures all across the country, folks voting for just outrageous attacks on women, bills that would take us back decades. And we have a very strong Republicans for Planned Parenthood, and it's growing by leaps and bounds, I can tell you, as a result of some of these attacks. But that's really what I hope, is that, honestly, these issues, they shouldn't even be partisan issues. Why in the world, why should women's health care be a Democratic or Republican issue? It makes absolutely no sense.
So the Gallup poll shows that the percentage of Americans who self-identify as pro-choice is at a record low of 41%. But interestingly, the percentage who want abortion to remain legal in some or all circumstances is unchanged at 77%.
Yeah.
I would imagine that, and I understand that you guys and some other groups have internal polls that show the same. So What does this say for Planned Parenthood's trajectory or messaging going forward?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, this is my own personal feeling, is that the whole pro-choice, pro-life labeling is completely irrelevant to people in America, and it doesn't represent, as you say, it doesn't all represent what people's point of view is in this country. I think that the topic of abortion is a very personal one. And it's one that people have very strong personal feelings about, and it is not well represented by political labels. But what we have seen consistently, and this is in the voters in South Dakota, voters in Mississippi, we could take the most conservative states in the country, is that consistently voters say, look, I may have my own personal beliefs, but I actually can't make that decision for every woman, and I can't really put myself in any woman's situation. And at the end of the day, where the American people are on this topic is that women need to be able to make their own decisions about pregnancy, and the last places these need to be decided are in state legislatures or in the U.S. Congress.
Is there a potential that there's a messaging gap on your side of the argument? For example, the words safe, legal, and rare were in the DNC
right.
platform, and that was taken out. And, you know, it seems that the use of the word rare is highly contentious. And I'm wondering what your feelings are about that.
I mean, I think, well, it's interesting because we've talked to a lot of people about this, and I think people believe rare is sort of a judgment call. And the truth is, I do think people believe it should be safe and legal, and they believe the more we can do to help provide young people sex education and women access to affordable birth control, then that'll help solve a lot of these problems, because women won't get pregnant when they're not ready to have a family. So the thing that kind of makes me crazy about this is, it's not like we have to invent some kind of new cure for some disease. We know actually what works. And again, I think the St. Louis study, just if you ever needed a kind of a duh moment, it was, look, if you provide women access to birth control and it's open and they can get whatever kind of birth control works best for them, they won't get pregnant when they're not ready to get pregnant. And so I just think that this is, look, it's crazy that in the 21st century, the United States has the highest teen pregnancy rate and the highest unintended pregnancy rate of any Western industrialized country, right? And that's because we are so hung up about sex and birth control.
So you're from Texas. How's that whole abstinence?
How's that working for us down there?
Thing going on down there?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm proud of being a Texan, but I have to say, I mean, Governor Rick Perry, not our finest moment. And in fact, I know it goes without saying here in the Bay Area, but Governor Perry, I mean, his policy is abstinence only. This is that means literally in our Texas schools, our policy is if you just don't talk about sex, no one will have it. Now, we also have the... We also have the second highest teen pregnancy rate in the world, I mean, in the country, so kind of go figure. Now, I think Governor Perry, though, says that abstinence only works. He knows it from personal experience. So that's how he's making policy in Texas.
Interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
A little TMI there.
Well, and there's a lot there. Yeah, not a little, but a lot. But I think No, the interesting thing is because actually, you know, Planned Parenthood, we're the biggest sex educator in America. We provide parents help who are trying to figure out how to talk to their kids. We provide young people information. And again, shocking news flash. Providing young people information about preventing unintended pregnancy, how birth control works, preventing STDs, it's not a big turn on. This is actually what we find consistently is that young people who are exposed to comprehensive sex education, they delay sexual activity till later. And when they do decide to become sexually active, they use contraception.
Seems clear that we need some rape education in this country as well.
Well, look, if there was ever a poster child for why we need sex education in America, it's Todd Akin. You know, that's, I mean, it should be required, anyone in Congress.
So after Susan B. Komen decided to pull its funding from you guys, you gained, I don't know what portion of that 1.5 million new activists, but a huge number of people came on board. When Sarah Palin attacked Planned Parenthood, people gave to you guys in her name to the tune of $800,000.
Actually, it was a million.
Oh, that's okay. A million.
Yeah.
You know, in the sort of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I mean, in a weird way, has this year and a half been good for you guys beyond fundraising?
Well, I'd say three things happened this last year, that are this last, you know, couple of years. First is, because of all the controversy, more people learned who we are and what we do. And that was incredibly important. The fact that more than 90% of our services are preventive care. That's just, it's like there's really no one in America.
That's intended to be a factual statement.
That's exactly, exactly right. Actually, you know, it's kind of funny though. There was, during the whole thing about defunding Planned Parenthood, you know, one night the Fox newscasters, after the House had voted to defund us, that Fox newscasters went on, I use that term advisedly, and they said, well, actually, you know, this was no big deal. Women didn't need Planned Parenthood because they could go to Walgreens for their health care and their pap smears, right? And so then, of course, Walgreens had to put out a national press release saying, please do not come to us for your pap smears.
We don't actually provide pap smears.
But the great thing was then Stephen Colbert, who was like the great truth teller in America, right, went on that night and he said, women, great news. You can go to Walgreens, get your pap smears. Just go look for those stirrups between the kitty litter and the Swiffer refills. So that happened. Look, that happened. People learned more about us. Our support grew. And look, I will admit I follow these things. When they did the poll after Congress voted to defund us, 69% of the American people supported Planned Parenthood. 10% supported the U.S. House of Representatives. Okay, so that was big. And then, of course, we gained a ton of new activists. And frankly, the most important thing, a new generation of activists.
Well, that's interesting because social media seemed to really rally people to your cause. And you gave an example earlier where it was the work of a staffer that sort of seeded the social media. But I'm wondering, in some of these other cases, what's been top-down versus bottom-up?
Everything is bottom-up. I mean, I really feel like, the incredible thing to me about social media and why I am such a fan is that it is the most democratizing sort of vehicle we have now for stories that otherwise don't make it in the news. And so, again, you know, when Planned Parenthood was so on the ropes and when the Congress was going after us, a young woman, Deanna Van Dant, who's a, you know, she's a blogger, right? So she made her own Tumblr site that said Planned Parenthood saved my life. And women began posting their own stories on social media about how their experience at Planned Parenthood. Now, that's not something that we could have ever generated. It was something that just was out in the ether and it made a huge difference. We had to take, you know, we had to create rallies overnight to support Planned Parenthood because it was a very short timeline to try to defend ourselves. Those were created through Facebook. And so I actually feel like the power of this is the Tea Party has power because they're controlling the U.S. House of Representatives, right? But Planned Parenthood has power because we have 6.8 million supporters in the United States of America. And I'd choose that any day.
And you've also been able to recruit a really large number of young men to the cause. Is it a different vibe between guys in their 20s and guys in their 40s or older? I mean, what's going on here? Why are the young guys with you? And where are the men our age?
Well, the good news is that young men in their 20s. The great news is that young men in their 20s are just as committed to birth control access as young women. And that's been
wise.
I know, it is wise. But I think it really is. I do believe that's going to be the big difference in this century, is that these are not issues that women just have to fight on their own. I have my own personal example. I have my twins are in college, and my son has never really been involved in that much before he got to college. Took a little while to kind of get it together. But I love him. I mean, I could go on and on about him. But what was interesting, and this was my sort of epiphany in some ways over the whole fight over Planned Parenthood, was we were, it was a crazy time. You know, the House had voted to defund us. We were on Fox News, getting, talked about every night. There are millions of, people on Facebook and this and that, and there's rallies all over the country. So my hair is on fire. I'm racing down to a rally in New York City with thousands of people who were there to support Planned Parenthood. And I get a text on my phone. It says, "Hey, Mom, I'm in a van with a bunch of kids from college. We're driving to Ohio to rally for Planned Parenthood."
Aww.
Daniel, right, for my son. And that's what I think, that's when I thought, okay, my son Daniel, he's getting into this. This is a movement in this country, and we're not going back in America.
Do you hold out hope that pro-choice Republicans will not go extinct?
I absolutely do. They're everywhere. They're just not in office. I think that's the so I really do. And look, there's some very courageous folks who, when Planned Parenthood, again, when we had to take a vote in the United States Senate over whether Planned Parenthood would still be able to see Medicaid patients for things like preventive care, right? Not abortions. Let's get that on the record.
Right, no
federal funding goes
to
either Planned Parenthood or anywhere else for abortion. And that's been true for decades since the Hyde Amendment was passed. I'd like to live to see the day that is repealed. But we had to take a vote in the United States Senate, and I have to say, we won that vote 58-42. Every single Democratic senator voted to support Planned Parenthood. But the most courageous people were the five Republican senators who stood and bucked their party and voted to defend Planned Parenthood. So I want to give them a shout out tonight. And thank them for that.
So yesterday, Governor Romney said, and I'm going to read this, "There's no legislation with regards to abortion that I'm familiar with that would become part of my agenda." Could you parse this for me?
I can't even understand what he was trying to say. And I think here's the bottom line. His positions are so extreme that when women find them out, they will not vote for him. And so I think this is what we've been seeing over the last two or three weeks, is I think a real concentrated effort by him to muddy the waters enough. He knows full well that every single extreme Tea Party piece of legislation that passed the House of Representatives, he would have rubber stamped if he had been president. And that's everything from restricting safe and legal abortion to defunding Planned Parenthood to getting rid of the family planning program. But I think what we've seen in the last few, certainly the last 2 weeks, is this sort of shuffle back and forth to try to make it sound like he's really not as extreme as he is.
So pro-life groups are preparing for a post-Roe world. I mean, it's what a lot of these personhood bills and other kind of restrictions are really about, is getting state law into place if Roe is overturned. They have a 50-state strategy. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a 50-state strategy?
Absolutely.
What is it?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Planned Parenthood, we operate everywhere, and I mean, we not only defend access to reproductive rights and reproductive care at the national level, we do it every state level as well. And it would be too complicated to sort of go through every single state, but we are in federal court, we are in state court, we are in the legislatures, and to me, it is about, it's both using every tool at our disposal, but also making sure that the men and women, and particularly this next generation of young men and women who do not want to go back to a day when women could not access safe and legal abortion. That is very, very clear. But it's not going to all happen in legislatures. It's going to happen at the grassroots level as well. And that's why I'm so proud that Planned Parenthood, not only as a provider of health care to 3 million folks every year, that we're the largest movement in this country to defend access to reproductive health care, and always will be.
So you worked on voter access for many years before, yep. Before going to Planned Parenthood. Why do you think people believe in massive voter fraud when evidence proves it's all but non-existent? I mean, it's right. Diminishingly like three zeros before or after the decimal point, non-existent.
Look, yes, exactly. I mean, I think if we want to talk about a voter problem we have in this country, it's that not enough people vote. You know, it's just incredible. And this is something you would think both parties could agree on. So whether it is, same day registration, allowing people to mail in their ballots, there are so many ways in which we could liberalize voting laws, because I think that is the big problem we have in this country, is that too many people, we either make it too hard and we turn them off from that. It's been really distressing this year in particular to see the kinds of really punitive laws. And I mean, I come from Texas where this has, been a art form, to try to keep people from voting. But to see, and particularly the Republican Party, I will say, and to see the kinds of laws that have been passed, fortunately, a lot of them have been stopped in the courts, but are really literally trying to disenfranchise millions of American people. It's un-American. It's undemocratic.
Can women have it all? And
I do.
You do.
I do. Yeah.
Oh my God, so. The Holy Grail. What's one thing aside from reproductive rights access? What's one thing you would change to ensure that women can have a better? I don't know if it's work-life balance or at least the sort of ability and fluidity that men have.
Fully funded daycare accessible for everybody in America. And I would say, I think that allows women to have it all and men to have it all. Mm. Because there's a lot of dads who are taking care of kids as well. But it's just unbelievable that we live in this century and women and men and families can't get affordable or comprehensive daycare.
At least as far back as a 1996 Mojo interview that I dug up today.
What is a Mojo interview?
With Mother Jones. You implied that, or just your
Oops.
Mojo. Okay. You implied that you'd always rather be an advocate than an elected politician. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's any chance you'd change your mind, because I'm sure the Texas DNC would be thrilled to hear about it.
I'm an activist at heart, and I think that I have enormous respect for folks who are in office. I got to see Nancy Pelosi up front, close and personal, and wrangle that House caucus every single day. And she is an amazing woman. I think she is one of the most underrated political leaders in this country. So thank you for giving her to all of us. But I also believe that elected officials, they need folks on the outside pushing them to do the right thing. And that's true every single day. And I'm proud to work for an organization that I hope every single day holds folks' feet to the fire. And that's our job at Planned Parenthood.
And more comfortable to hold others' feet in the fire than have your own feet in the fire?
We'll see. I mean, never say never. But I feel like we're doing an important job right now, and I'm really proud to be with Planned Parenthood.
Speaking of Todd Akins, as we did earlier, so today Senator Claire McCaskill released some powerful ads of rape survivors, many of them who made a point of saying that they were pro-life, some of whom, despite that, took emergency contraception, some of whom didn't, et cetera. They're very powerful, and I'm wondering, on the issue of legitimate rape and redefining rape, you guys must have done polling to see how this plays out. Can you share any of the insights that you would have as to, how this affects people's voting for or against a candidate?
Well, I mean, I think Missouri is its own case in point, but I think that, look, people's reaction is exactly what you would think, which is it is outrageous that we would do anything to prevent rape victims from getting the treatment they need, getting the health care that they need, get the counseling they need. The shaming that goes on with women in this country is inexcusable. And the fact that we would have someone who is in elective office make light of or in any way make it more difficult for women. I've talked to women, obviously, because we see a lot of women who are have either been a victim of a sexual assault or domestic assault, and they come to Planned Parenthood for care. And it's really sad to see what women say about the fact that this kind of language makes them question whether or not, you know, was their rape as bad as someone else's? The kinds of things that we know for years prevented women from getting access to emergency care. So, but the other thing I'll point out, since you brought up the Todd Akin comment, is that Paul Ryan, who right now is running for Vice President of the United States of America, co-sponsored the bill to redefine rape in this mm-hmm. country. People think Todd Akin is some kind of, like, just off on the deep end, and he's just one banana in the bunch up there in the House of Representatives.
Well, I think it's interesting that it seems the motivation behind that bill and others like it is a belief that young women in particular will lie about consensual sex, so to have and be able to, you know, to abortion, which may or may not be federally funded. It's a very elaborate sort of exercise that the logic is put through.
I have never understand why men are so obsessed with women's reproductive organs and things like that. It's just, that's the kind of thing, yeah, the kind of thinking that is required for them to go back about, anyway, they've got some other issues, I think.
So I'm going to bring up some audience questions. And if there are any more, I think there are people still circulating. There are cards on your chair, so you can pass them to the aisle. But should have brought my reading glasses. We are sophomores in high school and the leaders of our school's feminism club. How do we make a difference? What can we do to further the women's movement? How do we go about dealing with stereotypes regarding feminism and making it more accessible for teenagers? Jacqueline and Bix.
Okay, well, Jacqueline and Bix, that's awesome that you're here. And I think that, look, the fact that you are have the wherewithal to be leaders already in high school is great. And this is something where I actually work with a lot of young folks at Planned Parenthood. We have young women and men who are peer educators with Planned Parenthood who get their start in the movement, mm-hmm. so to speak, mm-hmm. by learning how to talk about some of the most difficult topics that make adults blush.
And what do the peer educators do?
What they do is they become really sex educators, mm-hmm. providing information to their peers about birth control, about STDs, about prevention, about and also issues of, you know, other issues that are on the minds of young people. Because it's not just about whether to have sex or not. It's literally young people want to know about sexual orientation and, mm-hmm. you know, am I normal? And just sort of some basic questions, and often they don't feel like they have anywhere else to go. The amazing thing about the young people at Planned Parenthood that do this work and health centers all across the country is they literally are kind of the underground railroad sometimes for birth control and information. And to me, you know, they're out there advocating in their school boards, and now we're bringing them to Congress to advocate for sex education. So to me, that the opportunities that you have in high school to get involved and actually become not only an expert but a leader, and then, you know, if you want to get involved with Planned Parenthood, let me know, because we bring young people together from all across the country who get to know each other and become just extraordinary, are already extraordinary young people, become extraordinary leaders in the movement. So, but congratulations to you for doing this work.
And to that point, I mean, I don't know if you noticed that Marissa Mayer, who's the new CEO of Yahoo.
Noticed, yes.
I think she had given this earlier, this interview earlier.
Okay.
But she had at one point given an interview where she sort of pointedly said, you know, I'm not a feminist. I'm not really comfortable with that term. Again, are we ever going to get over this issue about that word meaning signaling something that I don't really understand, but that people are so afraid of.
I mean, it's just, I think labels are so, they're just so hard for people. I think actually this next generation, that's what a lot of our research shows, is that they just don't want to be labeled in any way. Mm-hmm. And so, but I bet if you asked Marissa Mayer what she felt about women having just equal access to everything and to rights, she'd be 100% down with it. So I do think we have to think about terminology and labels that I think sometimes limit conversations. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's probably still true for feminism, is that people, they then put their own whole set of sort of judgments and values on mm-hmm. that, and we don't really get into the right kind of conversation.
Here's another question from the audience. How do we involve men in the conversation of reproductive health?
Well, I mean, the great news, I actually feel like, and again, this is a generational thing, but I think like the young educators I talked about, mm-hmm. peer educators, a third of them are young men. And so I actually feel like there is a real opportunity for because it's not just about like preventing pregnancy. I think this is like about sexual health. And it's about, are we going to ever get to a time in which that all people in this country can, we can agree as a people that sex is a good thing. It's part of life. It's how we all got here, for God's sake. And I do think that we're really working hard and intentionally at Planned Parenthood to bring more young men into both jobs, as activists, as patients. The fastest growing patient population at Planned Parenthood are young men coming to us for STD testing and treatment, or coming in with their partners for birth control.
How do you convince young women who have always had access to birth control and the freedom to choose that they are in danger of losing these rights?
Well, I think we actually saw that this year. I mean, when politicians, and again, I think one of the real mistakes that the Congress made was, if they had simply said, well, we have to cut family planning programs or whatever, it was some sort of like amorphous budget issue that was very hard mm-hmm. to get kind of people get all riled up about. But when they said, we're going to get rid of Planned Parenthood, that's where young people go for health care. And for many young women, it's the first adult doctor visit they have. And so I think that actually helped generate, mm-hmm. you know, a whole new, a whole new group of young people, young women and young men. I think the other thing, that the obligation on us is to give people ways to be involved. And so, I hope that, one thing I'd say is like everyone should like us on Facebook, because we got a lot of great stuff going on, a lot of opportunities for people to take action, and that's what we're focused on.
Do you think that people really have an idea of what the pre-Roe landscape looked like, though?
No idea. They have no idea. They shouldn't have an idea. It is so horrifying. I was actually just speaking to a group of doctors from around the country, some of the most important OBGYNs, reproductive health care specialists run programs at some of the major medical universities. And some of these, particularly men, will never forget the early days before Roe, of watching women bleed out and die in emergency rooms. It wasn't uncommon.
Yeah, we ran a memoir of a woman who had to get an abortion pre-Roe, and she interviewed a doctor, and he said, you know, after Roe, the deaths just stopped.
That's right.
And by the time they got to the emergency room, it was too late to do anything for the hemorrhaging.
That's exactly right.
You know, I also found it interesting that in the sort of early accounts of Margaret Sanger's first clinic, that not only the women who came in there had, you know, had many, many children, but many of them the majority of them had had an abortion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had managed to survive it. But, I mean, that also how prevalent abortion
right.
was. Someone from the audience asked, all of us must have a plan B. What is the plan B for Planned Parenthood if Romney is elected? How do you see focusing its energy?
Well, so one thing I just want to be sure, and I think I probably already have said it, but we have survived for 96 years at Planned Parenthood. And obviously, maybe I didn't say this in the beginning, I'm very proud of my job. I'm honored to work at Planned Parenthood, but this election is so important. I'm taking a break right now, and taking a short short time away to volunteer for the next 26 days to try to elect Barack Obama, re-elect him president of the United States. So I think that I think it's incredibly important that because the healthcare of the women that we see and the young people we see will be so dramatically affected by the next president. But I'll just say that at Planned Parenthood, we're going to continue to be here no matter what. Mm-hmm. And even if it was under an unfriendly administration, but it's going to mean I'm going to need a lot of you. Because it's going to mean that women and men in this country of all generations are going to have to stand up and they have to take action and not take any of this lying down.
How did the response to the Komen situation play out internally? Can you give us a sense of what unfolded for you in responding? You knew a little bit ahead of time that this was happening before the public knew.
Yeah. No. And look, I think what I was really focused on is a lot of women do come to us for their one doctor visit. That's it.
Right.
And so providing a breast exam and teaching women about breast health is incredibly important to us because that may be, it's interesting, you know, women come to Planned Parenthood primarily for birth control. Mm-hmm. That's usually the first time they come. Mm-hmm. But once you get them in the door and they've got a doctor visit, boy, it's such an opportunity to make sure they know about breast health, that they get a pap smear, that they get whatever other care that they need. Because unfortunately, too many women, they put off their own care, right? They'll take care of their family, their kids, or whoever, everything else before they take care of themselves. So to me, the work we do at early screening and education on cancer is really, really important. So to me, we're like this with the Komen Foundation in terms of what our goals are. Mm-hmm. And that is the more we can do early detection, we can save women's lives. And that's what we're about. So I felt like it was important to just stay true to that is exactly our purpose. We never wanted to get in a fight with the Komen Foundation. And I think that is
Did you say to Nancy Brinker, like, this is just going to create this unbelievable controversy? I mean, do you know what you're getting into? Did you get a sense that they did know what was going to happen?
You know, I've never spoken to her.
Oh, really?
I never had that opportunity. I had offered to talk to her about it. Because, mm-hmm. again, I think this is where what was so cynical is, of course, this was a manipulation by some very far right organizations who still harass the Komen Foundation.
Right. And the Girl Scouts.
And they harass us as well. And I said, you know, so yes, I think that's where I could have said, look, these are folks, any organization that would, for political purposes, try to prevent women from getting breast cancer screening, there's something wrong with them. It is really just about as low as you can go.
This isn't a question so much as a request from Janine DeAndre. Will you please run for President of the United States?
Okay, Janine.
Done.
Give me your card, Janine. Yeah, we'll talk later. Hey, but I will say, that, you know, it's important. I have two daughters. I have a son. I'm not going to be the next president of the United States or a president of the United States, but by God, I hope in my lifetime we have a woman president of the United States. It is so important. So many of the issues we talk about, I mean, it's not even funny. One of the things that we had to deal with in the Affordable Care Act, if I can just go back to that for a minute, because that's such an important bill. Literally, we had to fight whether or not maternity benefits were going to get covered by health insurance plans. Okay? This is incredible. So there was a debate in a hearing, and Senator John Kyle from Arizona, he literally said in a hearing, well, he didn't believe that maternity benefits should be covered by health insurance plans because he was never going to need them. Okay? Now, that's a pretty obvious point.
By prostate exams.
But the great thing is, and this is why having women in office matters, Senator Debbie Stabenow from Michigan came right back at him and said, I bet your mother did, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So that kind of shut that down, as we say. And I cannot overemphasize how important it is to have women in positions of power making policy. And so anyway, it's
So a couple of people have asked, what's the best way to get involved with Planned Parenthood? What, you know, ground level volunteering? What's the thing that they can do to help?
So if you're here in the Bay Area, well, first of all, like us on Facebook, because there just is a ton of stuff that you can get on social media that it's just hard, you know, it's like the easiest, fastest way. And we do a lot of work through social media. The other thing is I'd love to give a plug for Planned Parenthood here in the Bay Area. Planned Parenthood of Shasta Pacific and the Bay Area. All right. And I know my good friend CEO Heather Estes is here, who is our who runs just an outstanding organization. They do exactly, and I guess some of her fans are here, which is great. They do a fantastic job of not only providing excellent affordable health care, sex education, but they also have a very robust activist program. I know they're doing phone banking, I think, 3 nights a week now during this election season. So I hope. Please get in touch with Heather Estes and the Planned Parenthood here in the Bay Area.
So this is a traditional closing in forum question. You have 60 seconds to give us your recipe for how to change the world.
Oh, my God. How to change it in 60 seconds?
I don't think you have to change it in 60 seconds. You just have 60 seconds now, more like 45.
Look, I think the way we could change the world is if we did, I mean, I kind of referred to it earlier, if this country could just get it together and realize that sex is something very positive, it's a good thing in people's lives, and we could just be more open and honest with this next generation about sex and sexual health, this world would be a better place. So, anyway.
Okay, with that, let's give an even bigger round of applause for Cecile for her thoughts here tonight. Now this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.
Thank you. You did a great job. It was awesome. It was really fun. Thanks.